Morning.
Good morning.
I would like to welcome each one of the visitors and the home folks as well to the Sunday school portion of our service. God has painted a pretty picture this morning. Are we truly enjoying it? Out there, but in here. Here's a beautiful picture, seeing everybody assembled in God's house. Let's open our Bibles to Psalms 26, where we'll be reading the entire chapter. And the title was given, Examine Me. When we examine ourselves, and each one of us will find a fault that needs to be taken care of. And how we take care of that and when we take care of it should be of most importance to all of us. And if we truly, truly take care of that problem, God's grace will then turn us into a genuine Christian. Think on that. He will turn us into a genuine Christian. But we first have to examine each one, ourselves. Not our brother sitting next to us or our sister. Examine ourselves, and then God will make you genuine. Let's begin reading with verse 1 through 12. Judge me, O Lord, for I have walked in my iniquities. I have trusted also in the Lord, therefore I shall not slide. Examine me, O Lord, and prove me. Try my reins and my heart, for thy loving kindness is before mine eyes, and I have walked in the truth. I have not sat with vain persons, neither will I go in with disassemblers. I have hated the congregation of evildoers, and will not sit with the wicked. I will wash my hands in the innocence, so will I compass thine altar, O Lord, that I may publish with the voice of thanksgiving and tell of thy wondrous works. Lord, I have loved the habitations of thy house and the place where thy honor dwelleth. Gather not my soul with the sinners, nor my life with bloody men, in whose hands is mischief, and their right hand is full of bribes. But as for me, I will walk in mine integrity. Redeem me and be merciful unto me. My foot standeth in an even place. In the congregation will I bless the Lord. All who are able at this time, let's kneel for a word of prayer. Before I have Brother Andy come up and lead us in another song, ages 12 and under will go to their classes in the basement. And those that are visiting that have children, you're invited to go along with them down to their classes. And after Andy's singing of the song, Brother Laverne Long has consented to bring the lesson.
Well, good morning. Welcome each one out to God's house this morning. Truly grateful for the presence of each one as we open God's word. Our brother's been trying to get me to come for quite some time, and one thing I learned about him, he doesn't forget your name or your phone number, so he keeps trying. So here we are to try and fill this responsibility. As I was thinking of coming and standing before you this morning, I thought of those from this congregation that have impacted my life in a great way over the years. I think of Brother Merle, even our senior, who to me was like a grandfather figure. Both of my grandfathers had passed away when I was very young. And I looked up to Brother Merle quite a bit as a teenager. I sat under quite a few youth messages at youth services. Spent time talking with him made a great impact on my life. And so I'm grateful for this congregation of believers. I don't come here often, but I do feel a kinship with the brothers and sisters here. Our lesson this morning is Examine Me from Psalms 26. I would ask a continued interest in your prayers, as well as your thoughts and comments and questions as we go along. I typically am used to conversation and interaction. I won't feel that you're leading us off on a bunny path or interrupting me at all if you just start talking. I would appreciate that. Three reasons that I like discussion. One, I don't have to do all the talking. Two, the more we all put into it, the more we'll all get out of it. And three, I'm here to learn as well. Judge me, O Lord. Psalms 26, for I have walked in mine integrity. I have trusted also in the Lord. Therefore, I shall not slide. This psalm was written, depending on who you ask, some feel it was written when Absalom had ran David out of Jerusalem and had taken over the kingship. Others feel it was written when Saul was after David, and David was in exile in probably the land of the Philistines. I don't know which is true, but for the purpose of our study this morning, I will go with the latter and consider the fact that David wrote this while he was running from King Saul. Why does David need a judge at this time? Why wouldn't he go to the law of the land, to the judge of the land? Because Saul was considered, let's say, the Supreme Court of the land. The Supreme Court was after this man. There was nothing more that he could do other than turn to God. And as I was studying, I couldn't help but think of our brothers and sisters in other lands that are in a similar situation. There is no one else that they can turn to but God to judge their case. We sang the hymn this morning, I love thy kingdom, Lord. And as we were traveling here this morning, we had a CD on, and the song was, There is a kingdom coming. And I was thinking about that as I think about our brothers and sisters that are enduring persecution for their faith in Jesus Christ. There is a kingdom coming. There is a time when every wrong will be made right. Are we looking forward to that time? Our brothers and sisters who do not have the pleasant circumstances that you and I have are. And they're calling out for God this morning to judge between me and the wrong that I am enduring. David says, I have walked in mine integrity. As far as I know, between me and King Saul, I have done nothing wrong. And I'm still being chased and being hunted. He talks about being hunted as a bird and as an animal in some of his writings. And he says, I've still done nothing wrong. How does this go on? How can this go on? How can God allow someone who has done virtually no wrong to be pursued and persecuted? He says, I have walked in mine integrity. What is integrity? We want to spend a fair amount of time on that word this morning. What is integrity? He says, I have walked in it. So what is integrity this morning? What did David walk in? What was David referring to when he said that my integrity is what represents me? This is the path that I have walked. We've heard it said that integrity is what you are when no one is watching. When no one knows what you would do, that determines what your integrity is. And I think that's true. I think it may be more than that. We often look at it as, you know, what would I do if I could get away with it? And I was thinking also, integrity might be more than that. Maybe we're not so much worried about what we could get away with, But perhaps integrity is more than that. Maybe integrity is, what would I do, I'll say on a good side, if I knew no one would find out? Do I do the things I do for the praise of others? Would I do the good that I do if I knew no one would find out? Integrity is doing what is right in all circumstances. The dictionary says that integrity is an adherence to strict moral or ethical code, soundness, complete. When David says he has walked in his integrity, he is saying, I don't know that I have done anything wrong. As far as I know, between me and my God, there is nothing that I have done wrong to King Saul. Does that mean David is a perfect person? Has David done no wrong? He says, I have walked in mine integrity. Will your integrity save you this morning? David hangs pretty heavily on his integrity. Is that enough for us this morning? I don't think David thinks so. David puts a lot of stock in his integrity. And his integrity is important to him. But he says, I have trusted also in the Lord. Therefore, I will not slide. My integrity will not save me. I am supposed to be a person of integrity, albeit. But my integrity will not save me. If I do not have trust in the Lord, my integrity will not hold. I will slide. I will fail. I will come up short. Many people claim they have integrity until their case comes to trial, and then something new is brought to light. Somebody comes up with another piece of evidence, and they're like, oh, well, yeah, about that. David said, that's not going to come up. I'm sure of that, and I have trusted in the Lord. So he says, Lord, examine me and prove me. Try my reins and my heart. Innocency and integrity does not save us from those who want to ruin our name. It just means that we are free from their false accusations. Their accusations are false against us. It doesn't mean because I have integrity that no one's going to have anything against me. There's some people in Scripture, and maybe we've been, I'll say our integrity has been called upon sometimes to be tested. We can think of Daniel, Joseph, Job, all of those, and there's more, whose integrity was called into question, and their integrity stood. I'm a farmer, and a number of years ago, I took a load of hay into Lancaster. I get to Lancaster Farming, and I read in there that hay prices were really high at New Holland, and so I had some, I thought, real good quality hay, and I loaded it up and I took it to New Holland. And I got real good price for this hay. And as soon as the load was struck down, the buyer walks over to me and says, we're going to go reweigh this load. He was questioning my integrity. You see, I didn't realize it, but for the past few weeks he's been doing that, and he hadn't found hardly anybody's loads that weighed what they said they weighed. Okay. Sometimes our integrity is going to be called into question. Integrity does not mean that no one will question what we do, but it means whenever we're tried, whenever someone tries our reins and our heart, tries our ways, we're going to be proven to be a person of integrity, or we're going to be proven to be a fake. The story is told of a store clerk years ago who had one chicken left to sell for the day. Customer comes in and asks for a chicken. And the store clerk pulls the chicken out of the ice water and puts it on the scales and says 6 pounds. The customer says, I was kind of hoping for a bigger one. Do you have any others? So the store clerk takes it down and swishes it around in the ice chest and brings out the chicken and says 7 and a half. And the customer says, I'll take both. You see, our integrity will be called into question. and will either be proven right or proven wrong. David could not ask for a judge. And there may come a day, you know, I think we all see storm clouds on the horizon, and we wonder who will be our judge, who will stand for us, and it is going to be none other than the one that David called on that will right the wrongs someday. As for David's sin against God, he does not claim his integrity to do him any good. But as for his case with King Saul, he claims his integrity to hold up. As far as his standing with God, he realizes what he does is not going to be good enough. And he says, therefore, I have trusted in the Lord. And if we jump ahead down to verse 11, he says, redeem me and be merciful unto me. So David's integrity is important, but it is not enough to save him. It is a great comfort to us when we're falsely accused that there is a righteous God who will sooner or later make all things right. He is not only aware of our deeds, but also of our motives and the level of our sincerity. So I may do the right things, but not necessarily for the right reasons. Our deeds sometimes can be misread by those around us, by our brothers and sisters, by our family, by our neighbors. They may think they know why we just did what we did and said what we said, but there is a God who doesn't misunderstand us. And David asked him to examine him and prove him and try his reins and his heart, to search him thoroughly and completely, to search out his motives. God already knows these things. I don't know that he really has to search. But in asking God to search, basically I would say David is saying, would you show me what you see in me? May you help me see me as you see me. Verse 3. For thy loving kindness is before mine eyes, and I have walked in thy truth. We have a bit of a list of things that David says, this I have done and this I have done. And then he says, we're going to get into later, things I have not done. We're going to need more than integrity to see us through great difficulties and injustices. We must recognize God's goodness and his truth. If all that I have to hang on in life is the good that I have done, it's never going to be enough. But David says, thy loving kindness is ever before me. Yes, I've been run out of the kingdom. I'm running for my life and I feel it's completely unjust. And yet, as I look around me, I see God's goodness. I have walked in thy truth. We're told in Galatians 5 and 25 to walk in the Spirit. And in 2 John verse 4, to walk in the truth. David says, I have walked in thy truth. I have walked in mine integrity, and now I have walked in thy truth. My integrity is subjective to the objective of God's truth. I think that's important. We put emphasis on a person's testimony, on a person's integrity, and that is important. But all of that is vain if we do not understand the objectiveness of God's truth. It doesn't change. My story, my life, the good that I do is only good if there is a objective that does not change. If there is a foundation to measure good and bad by, we have that because of God's truth. We know what wrong is because we know what right is. So he says, I've walked in my integrity, and my integrity is only integrity because I have walked in truth, because I know what good and evil is. I know what right and wrong is. So let's understand that my integrity is important, but it is only valuable because there is a way of truth for us to walk in. Verses 4 and 5. I have not sat with vain persons, neither will I go in with dissemblers. I have hated the congregation of evildoers and will not sit with the wicked. Turn to Psalms chapter 1. We'll read some similar verses from Psalms chapter 1. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. Okay? The company we keep is going to determine our integrity to some degree. You will judge a person based on the company he keeps. And David says, to try to validate my integrity, there's certain people that I don't spend a lot of time with. I don't hang out with the crowd of vain people or dissemblers, those who try to act like they're something that they're not. A dissembler is someone who feigns being what he really is. I don't hang out with those people. If you take this chapter in the context of the setting that I had mentioned earlier, where David is running from King Saul, more than likely there was a group of people that David could have hung out with who really hated King Saul. And David had, in their mind, every right to hate him just as much as they did. Most leaders of a land have a few people in their land that would like to get rid of them. And David said, I don't hang out with them people. He's not treating them as badly as he's treating me. If I really was one of them, that's who I would be with, and my integrity would be marred. He says, I have hated the congregation of evildoers. I don't sit with the wicked. I don't become one of them. Why can't those that's chasing me see that? Oh, that God would step in and clear my record. He says, I have washed mine hands in innocency, so will I compass thine altar. There, in David's mind, is a proper way to come before God. And he says, I want to come before you holy and innocent. I don't want to come casually into your presence just assuming that I'm just fine. Maybe my integrity is not good enough. He says, I wash my hands in innocency, and I want to come before your altar. I want to come worship you. I want to offer sacrifice to you. 1 Corinthians 11 and 28 says, but let a man examine himself, and so let him eat. And David's saying, I'm going to wash my hands in innocency, and I'm going to surround the table. I'm going to come and partake. I'm going to come and commune with God. So when we ask, our brother mentioned as he was opening here this morning, he said about examining ourselves. I believe our lesson title is Examine Me. So I was thinking, well, what's the difference? We're asking God to examine us, and God says in 1 Corinthians, but let a man examine himself. How does that come together? Does both happen? How do we examine ourselves? How does God examine us? God, I said we're told in Galatians 5 and 25 to walk in the Spirit. And I believe the Spirit examines us, helps to examine us. God doesn't speak audibly to us. But if we spend time in His Word and with His Spirit, we walk in His Spirit, we're allowing Him to examine us. And we're asking Him to show us, as David did, what we are. Show me what you see, Lord, in me. I don't want to just see myself the way I think I am. I want to see me the way you see me. Examine me, prove me, try me. And then we can come before His altar. Verse 7, that I may publish. Why? He's saying, I'm going to cleanse myself and surround your altar, that I may publish with the voice of thanksgiving and tell of all thy wondrous works. Turn to Hebrews chapter 13. We'll read verses 10 through 16. Hebrews 13, 10 through 16. I don't know if Yuns typically pass verses around, but I'm going to ask Brother Brian Hoff, would you read Hebrews 13, 10 through 16 for us?
We have an altar whereof they have no right to eat, which serve the tabernacle. For the bodies of those beasts whose blood is brought into the sanctuary by the high priest for sin are burned without the camp. Wherefore Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered without the gate. Let us go forth therefore unto him without the camp, bearing his reproach. For here we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. By him therefore let us offer the sacrifice of praise to God continually. That is the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name. But to do good and to communicate, forget not, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased.
David wants to surround the altar. He says there in verse 6, that I may compass thine altar. What happened at the altar? What took place on the altars in the Bible?
Blood sacrifice for sin.
Sacrifices were made. There was thank offerings, there was peace offerings, there was various offerings offered. Blood offering for sin. We don't offer on a physical altar now these things. But David talks about, and I didn't put those scriptures in. Paul brings it up here in Hebrews. He talks about the sacrifice of praise. What is the sacrifice of praise? We want to surround the altar, do we not? We want to compass the altar as David did. And we're told to bring a sacrifice of praise. What is a sacrifice of praise? What is sacrificial, maybe you should say, of praise? That I may publish with the voice of thanksgiving and tell of all thy wondrous works. When I'm offering a sacrifice of thanksgiving, I'm not talking about myself. When I am offering up a sacrifice of thanksgiving, I am lowering myself and exalting the God who is worthy to be praised. You see, it takes some humility for us to recognize that God has done things for ourselves that we probably, some of which we never could have done for ourselves, some of which maybe we could have, but we give him the credit for it anyway, because it really was him. We're to bring a sacrifice of praise with and lift our voice in thanksgiving and tell of his wondrous works. This is an area that I felt like I come up short. I can talk about the weather and I can talk about farming. I was with a family here recently, and I said I can really connect well with that fellow because he's a farmer, and it's easy for us to talk. What about finding a brother that I can talk about the Lord with? What about those who don't even know the Lord? Do I share with them of the wondrous works that God has done for someone else, and what he has done for me? He says that I may publish. He didn't just say that I may tell, but you think about the word publish. When something is published, it's spread abroad. Its publications go from state to state, all across the country. Publications are everywhere. I am to publish with the voice of thanksgiving of all the wonderful things that God has done for me. And yet, I remember, David's more than likely running for his life. He says, God's been so good to me through it all. Lord, I have loved the habitation of thy house and the place where thine honor dwelleth. Where was God? Where was David referring to here? He said, I have loved the habitation of thy house and the place where thine honor dwelleth. Where is that? What is David saying that he has put in such high regard in his life? Where did God's honor reside in the Old Testament? Where did God's glory get revealed?
The Holy of Holies on the mercy seat.
The Holy of Holies on the mercy seat. Okay. I believe David's saying he loves to go to the tabernacle and worship. Why was the tabernacle a special place? The Ark of the Covenant was there. The Ark of the Covenant was something that was extremely special to the children of Israel. And we read, I'm not sure if it's 1 or 2 Samuel, offhand I can't remember. But when the Philistines were in battle in the days of Eli, and they took the Ark of the Covenant away from Israel, there was a child born right at that time, and the child was named Ichabod. He said, because the glory is departed. We have lost what made us special. God said that his glory would, and his power was, I'll say, not that it was contained in that ark, but it was a symbol that they were a special people because they owned and possessed that ark. And he said, I love that. So what, we don't have the Ark of the Covenant with us. And I was thinking about what the Ark of the Covenant represented and what it contained. Contained the commandments, for one. Were kept in that ark. Turn to Jeremiah chapter 31. Jeremiah 31, verses 31 through 33. Brother Kenny Nell, would you read that for us? Jeremiah 31, 31 through 33.
Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made.
shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, saith the Lord, I will put my laws in their inward parts, and write in their hearts, and will be their God, and they shall be my people.
Jeremiah is talking of a day that would come when God would not be confined to the people of Israel. There was going to be a change take place where God was going to write the law of God upon people's hearts, where God's Spirit was going to work directly with the people. There was not going to be such an umbrella over a nation, and this is my people. God's people was going to be those who walked with him, of whoever they were. Would it be a stretch for us to say this morning that God's honor resides on the church of Jesus Christ today?
It does, but the covenant was made only with Israel. No covenant to the Gentiles. But we are grafted in Rome. So it's the house of Israel and the house of Judah. There are times that you can associate Gentile with Israel, but the other is definitely Jews. And if you notice, it says the covenant with their fathers. So the covenant is only made with Israel. It's up to us to be grafted in.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, it is the church. What is the church? It's those that believe in God, both Jew and Gentile. Three kinds of people in the world. Jews, Gentiles, and the church made up of Jews and Gentiles.
Thank you. My thought is, David said, I love the place of thy habitation, the place where thine honor dwelleth. And I would picture that as the church this morning. And I want to ask you how much love you have for the church of Jesus Christ.
David's talking about the presence of the Lord. He wants to be the Lord's presence. When a church honors God's word, proclaims God's word, lives for the Lord, we have the presence of God. Two or three are gathered. So it's really, the bottom line is the desire of the presence of the Lord. And of course, that's a mixture of his people and everything.
Mm-hmm.
We just sang it this morning, didn't we? We sang the song, I Love Thy Kingdom, Lord. And confessed it.
The house of thine abode. So how much emphasis do we put on it? Is this something that we find very important to us? I was thinking of what value does God, or what value did Jesus put on his bride?
Gave himself for it.
Because we weren't good enough of our own. His goal was to make his bride perfect. And there's one day, you know, I was likening this to, I'll say, to a more human situation. A good many of us, brethren, are married. You wanna get on the wrong side of us, start running our wife down. Probably won't take us too long to get defensive. It does a young man a lot of good for his father to say, you know what, you chose a really good wife. That does us a lot of good. And there's one day when Jesus is going to call his bride home, and he's going to present his bride to his father, and his father's going to be pleased. Let's make sure that we're part of that bride, and we're not one of those that's picking the bride apart. That we're as David, and we see the value that God places upon the church, that he puts his honor there, that he sent his son to redeem. It's something extremely important to him, and if it's that important to him, it needs to be of utmost importance to us. A number of years ago, I was at a wedding and was listening to the message at the wedding, and the minister said, family is important, but he feels like In our day and age, we've put too much emphasis on the family and not enough on the church. It's like, well, the church is made up of families, so they kind of go together. But then he said, God made promises to the church that he did not make to your family. He didn't promise to come back for your family. He promised to come back for the church. He said, it's your responsibility. He was referring to the young couple. The same applies for all of us. It is our responsibility as a family to be in the church, to be part of the church, to be up building the church. It's our responsibility as parents to get our children in the church and instill in them the value of the church. God promised to come back for her, and then our family can all be together with the family of God. David says, I have loved the habitation of thy heart, of thy house, and the place where thine honor dwelleth. I don't know if some of David's writings here speak to his... We know the saying, distance makes the heart grow fonder. If David had not been able to worship the Lord at the tabernacle, it may have increased his longing to be there, and it maybe have seemed more important to him than ever. But when David had that opportunity, I'm pretty sure he didn't miss the opportunity to gather with the congregation there. And even so, he was worshiping the Lord, whether he was at the tabernacle or not. He says, gather not my soul with sinners, nor my life with bloody men, in whose hands is mischief, and their right hand is full of bribes. Again, a group of people that he does not want to associate with. I was thinking about the gathering, Matthew 13 talks about a man went out, Jesus is telling a parable, a man went out and sowed good seed in his field. And when it came up, there was tares among the wheat. And his servant said, didn't we sow good seed in this field? What happened? And he said, no, somebody came and sowed tares. They said, should we go get rid of them? He said, no, let them grow together. And when the harvest has come, we'll gather the tares first, bind them, and then we'll gather the wheat. David says, gather not my soul with these people. There's going to be a gathering one day. We're going to be gathered on one side, on the other. We're going to be gathered with the wheat. We're going to be gathered with the tares, one or the other. And David is asking God to make sure my soul is in such a state before you that I would not be gathered with these people. He says, as for me, in verse 11, I will walk in mine integrity, redeem me, and be merciful to me. Again, David is saying, my integrity is not enough. My integrity is good between me and Saul. But my integrity isn't enough when I stand before you. I'm good when I measure myself to Saul, but I'm not good when I measure myself to God. He says, therefore, be merciful unto me and redeem me. My foot standeth in an even place. In the congregations will I bless the Lord. Though likely banished from the congregation, he says that he is going to bless the Lord. We don't know what the future holds for us, but let us purpose, as David did, to walk in integrity and to continue to bless the Lord no matter what our lot. I'll leave you with Galatians chapter 6 and verse 9. Maybe not so much on the line of our lesson, but a verse that I find challenging and would just like to let with you this morning. Let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. What does David say to do when things are going bad? You know, sometimes we wonder, what do we do? What do we do? What should we do? And David closes the chapter out by saying, I'm still going to do what's right. I have no way to right this situation between me and Saul. There's no one to judge between us. What am I going to do? I'm going to continue to walk in my integrity and ask the Lord to be merciful to me. When all else fails and we don't know what to do, just do what's right. Continue to do what's right. Don't be weary in well-doing, for we'll reap if we faint not. Thank you for your time, attention, and input. Third time.